Welcome to The Critique. Today we are looking at The Grammar of Violence, a systemic treatise arguing that modern crises from war to ecological collapse are predictable outputs of a hidden cultural code.
And our goal today is to really analyze the structural integrity of this argument to make sure the proposed civilizational redesign lands with maximum impact.
Right, so jumping into angle and originality. The manuscript excels its systemic diagnosis using the dualistic template, but it risks leaving the reader paralyzed by the scale of the problem without a concrete bridge to the holistic solution.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, the first half is just phenomenally strong.
It really is.
The way the author uses the violence triangle and this concept of moral coloring.
Turning red traffic lights to green, basically.
Right, exactly. To justify harm. It's just a compelling, visceral explanation of why things are fundamentally broken. You read it and you feel it.
You really do. But then we hit this major weakness.
The transition.
Right, the transition to part three, specifically chapter six.
Where they introduce the alternative template, the HDT.
It just feels like a massive jump from this hard empirical reality into just philosophical idealism.
It really does. And I think the text actually admits this.
Oh, definitely. In section 6.4,
yes. The author actually writes that HDT feels weaker in a DMA world.
Which is a very honest admission.
It is. But it doesn't solve the problem for the reader. Defining the solution as holism, dialectics, and transcendence is intellectually sound. But emotionally, it's completely hollow compared to that really visceral final battle narrative of the DMA that we got earlier.
Totally hollow. So to fix this, the material desperately needs to operationalize the HTT framework. The author should be analyzing a historical or maybe a microscale success story rather than just defining these terms abstractly.
I agree. We need concrete examples. Like, instead of just defining transcendence as redesign, they need to analyze a specific real-world event.
Like what?
A moment where a zero-sum conflict was actively transformed into a non-zero-sum outcome.
Right.
For instance, look at the Montreal Protocol.
The ozone layer agreement.
Exactly. It wasn't framed as good versus evil. It wasn't a crusade. It was a viability-first constraint that literally reshaped the market.
That's a great example. They changed the economic parameters to ensure survival.
Yeah. And you could do the same thing for dialectics.
Okay, how so?
Use a Peace and Reconciliation Commission as your example. Demonstrate dialectics as actively managing tension.
Right, versus the final battle concept.
Which is just annihilation. You have to show the reader how the gear shift actually happens, you know? Don't just tell them it should happen.
Make it mechanical. Show the engineering behind the transition.
Exactly. It grounds the philosophy in actual history.
Okay, let's shift to tone and style. The reliance on biological metaphors, specifically the cancer logic in Chapter 8, effectively illustrates the mechanics of unchecked growth, but unintentionally risks stripping political agency from the narrative.
This was a big sticking point for me.
I mean, I have to say, I actually praised the definition of the cancer logic.
Oh, absolutely. The concept of pathogenic growth.
Right, where a part destroys the whole to maximize itself. It's a terrifyingly effective visualization of modern economics.
It is. It perfectly explains why good people in corporate structures end up doing immense damage to the environment. They're just following a growth code.
But there's a huge weakness with this metaphor.
Right. If the system is a cancer, the reader's logical conclusion is that the only solution is surgery.
Violent excision.
Or death. That's it. Those are the options with cancer.
Which completely contradicts the book's later call for conscious redesign.
And a nonviolent transition. Cancer cells do not negotiate.
They definitely don't.
They don't redesign themselves. They just consume until the host dies. So the metaphor is almost working too well. It creates a fatalistic trap.
Exactly. So my suggestion here is to complicate the biological metaphor. Introduce concepts like neuroplasticity or an immune response to restore agency to the actors within the system.
I love that. Give us some concrete examples of how to implement that.
Sure. So in chapter 16, the viability grammar.
Right.
Instead of just talking about institutions as life-enabling in this very dry way, frame social movements or regulatory bodies as the system's immune system.
Oh, that's really strong. They're the white blood cells attempting to check the cancer.
Exactly. Suddenly, the reader isn't a passive victim of a tumor. They are part of an active defense mechanism.
And what about neuroplasticity?
Right, so use neuroplasticity to describe how the code works. If the code is the neural pathways of society, it can be rewired.
Through repetition.
Yes, through the repetition of new habits, rather than just cut out with the scalpel.
That is so much better. It makes the transition described in Part 7, Breaking the Spell, feel actually achievable.
Not just achievable, but like a natural process.
Right. It feels less like a miracle cure and more like, you know, physical therapy.
Which is hard work, but possible.
Exactly. It completely changes the narrative momentum of that section.
Let's move on to audience alignment and purpose. The deconstruction of the enemy, construction engine, and projection is psychologically astute, but it needs to grapple more directly with the reality of genuine external aggression to maintain credibility with a skeptical policy-literate audience.
Yeah, this is the hard power problem.
Right. I want to validate the insight in Chapter 9.
The idea that internal complexity collapses into external clarity?
Yes. It is a brilliant psychological observation. The idea that we create enemies to avoid fixing our own internal inequality is incredibly powerful.
It explains so much of modern political rhetoric.
It does. But there is a massive weakness here.
The text risks sounding naive.
Dangerously naive.
By framing war almost exclusively as projection or a structural output, it ignores that sometimes there actually is a wolf at the door.
Sometimes an invasion is just an invasion.
Right. And if a reader, say, a defense analyst or a historian, feels like the text ignores the reality of genuine bad actors, they will dismiss the structural argument entirely.
They'll just toss the book, call it utopian.
Exactly.
So the suggestion is to introduce a distinction test, or maybe call it a viability response to actual aggression.
We need concrete examples of how this looks in the text.
So add a section in Part 5 that explicitly asks the question,
what does a viability first state do when attacked?
Exactly. The author has to show how a state operating under the HDT model would handle a DMA aggressor.
Because it wouldn't just mean pacifism or surrender.
That's systemic suicide. It might mean containment.
Preserving system health.
Right, rather than a crusade.
Which is moral annihilation.
Yes. The author needs to clearly distinguish between defense of life support systems,
which is legitimate,
and defense of imperial projection,
which is illegitimate. This nuance is critical.
It will buy so much credibility with readers who are otherwise very skeptical of pure pacifism. It shows the author isn't ignoring real politic.
They're just offering a different tool for managing it.
It proves the system works in the real world, not just in a vacuum.
Let's look at structure and flow for our final point. The recursive structure of the manuscript mirrors the closed-loop system it describes, but for the reader, this structure risks feeling like repetitive circling rather than narrative momentum.
This is a huge structural weakness. We see the violence triangle in Part 2.
Right.
Then we see the self-sealing loop in Part 2.
Yeah.
And then the closed-loop system again in Chapter 12.
It's just too much looping.
The arguments are totally consistent, but they really begin to blur together by the time you hit Part 6. It feels static. So the suggestion to fix this pacing issue is a major structural shift. Instead of restating the existence of the loop in those later chapters, the author needs to use those chapters to demonstrate acceleration or entropy.
Give us some concrete examples of how to do that.
In Part 6, the feedback architecture.
Okay.
Rather than explaining the loop diagrammatically again, the author should walk through a specific future scenario.
So drop a concrete event into the machine.
Exactly. Take a hypothetical resource crisis.
Like a water shortage in 2035.
Perfect. Take that water shortage and trace it through the loop in a real-time narrative.
Show the gears turning.
Yes. Show how the code automatically selects the military option.
Show how the media colors it green to justify the conflict.
And show how the cancer logic demands the extraction of the remaining resources.
Right. Make the reader actually feel the trap closing around them.
Right. Rather than just showing them the blueprint of the trap for the third time, this turns the repetition into suspense.
It becomes a simulation. It accelerates the pacing right when the book needs it most.
Because once you terrify the reader with that simulation, they're going to be begging for the redesign.
It sets up the finale perfectly.
It really does. So to summarize this critique, the material is a profound structural analysis, but to take it to the next level, it needs four key things. First, ground the HTT solution in historical precedents to make it feel viable.
Right. Operationalize the cure. Make it mechanical.
Second, nuance the cancer metaphor to allow for systemic healing and learning, like neuroplasticity.
Give the reader agency. Stop the fatalism.
Third, address real aggression with a distinction test to avoid appearing naive to the policy crowd.
Face the wolf. Show us what a viability-first defense looks like.
And fourth, use scenario planning to break the repetitive cycle of the chapters and build narrative suspense.
Show us the acceleration. Don't just show us the blueprint.
Exactly. You have seen the code. Now you need to write the patch.
We really encourage you to take these structural suggestions and build out that scaffolding.
Absolutely. We invite you to revise the manuscript with these lenses in mind and submit the redesign condition for another review. Thanks for listening to The Critique.